At Epic Burger, every classic burger is made with 100% natural, halal-certified Angus beef. Epic Burger uses real, premium-quality ingredients in their mission to serve a more mindful burger to every customer. There are 8 Epic Burger locations around Chicagoland. Grab a friend and head to Epic Burger to try the halal-friendly burger today. This is a pre-recorded broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the show.
The arrival of slaves in the 1600s. Shackled, ill, and tortured. America's first Africans came broken, but not beaten. Did you know that about 20% of these slaves were Muslims from West Africa? With other slaves, they fought over centuries for their freedom and dignity. They struggled to keep their faith despite whippings, murder, and oppression.
What is your real name?
Malcolm.
Malcolm X.
Is that your legal name?
As far as I'm concerned, it's my legal name.
Would you mind telling me what your father's last name was?
My father didn't know his last name. My father got his last name from his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his grandfather, who got it from the slave master. The real names of our people were destroyed during slavery.
Was there any line?
February is Black History Month. It is a time to commemorate the struggles.
I have a dream. My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
And to commemorate the successes of African Americans.
I, Barack Hussein Obama,
do solemnly swear
that I will execute the office of President of the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Visit our website for special programming on this occasion at radioislam.com. Radio Islam remembers.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Radio Islam, the nation's first daily live call-in talk radio show produced by Muslims for the mainstream market. Radio Islam, on the air since 2004 because of your generosity. Radio Islam salutes its most valuable asset, you, our listener. From our producers to our interns, we appreciate your support. Thank you. Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM, Chicago. I am Janann Hashim, your host for tonight. We are a live daily call and talk radio program airing from 6 to 7 p.m. Central. We reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com, where you can also tap into all of our prior shows as well. Our lines are open, folks, and I encourage you to engage in tonight's conversation and to bring your question to the airwaves at 312-263-ISLAM. Again, that's 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking on Facebook by posting your thoughts on our wall at facebook.com/radiosam1450. You can catch us on Twitter at radiosam1450. Tahara, my trusty producer, what do you have lined up for us tonight?
Well, we've been doing this entire month so far, we've been doing some awesome series on Black History Month, and today's show is part of that series. We're focusing on African Americans and the prison system. So talking about some of the racial inequalities in the prison system, where we've come and where we still need to go.
Yeah, maybe even a new kind of Jim Crow's going on behind the scenes, you know, just under the social conscience there. Well, my first guest is John Mackey. He's executive director of the John Howard Association of Illinois, the state's only nonpartisan prison watchdog and correctional policy organization. As head of JHA, Mr. Mackey's commentary on prison reform has appeared in the nation's leading media outlets, including those right in our backyard here in Chicago. Mr. Mackey is a lawyer and has represented wrongfully convicted people before the Illinois Prisoner Review Board in clemency proceedings. Welcome to Radio Islam. Thanks for joining us tonight, Mr. Mackey.
Thank you very much.
Now, the facts are really grim for the current generation of African Americans. When I was like researching for tonight's show, I understand 1 in 3 black men will go to prison in their lifetime, according to the 2013 report of the Sentencing Project to the UN Human Rights Committee. This is a very, very harsh number when compared to the male counterparts out there. The white male counterpart, only 1 in 17 by comparison, will go to prison. So let's start taking this apart one layer at a time. First, the Justice Department data cited in the report, they noted that police arrests arrested black youth for drug crimes at more than twice the rate of white youth between 1980 and 2010. This is nationwide, not just here in Chicago. And yet, the funny thing is, a 2012 study from the National Institute on Drug Abuse found that white high school students were slightly more likely to have abused illegal drugs within the past month than black students of the same age. So what can be done to make law enforcement more accountable for this kind of discriminatory practice that they're doing?
Well, I think, you know, to start, it would be really important to see drugs not as a criminal justice issue, but a public health issue. And that, I think, would include decriminalizing, small amounts of drugs, most importantly, marijuana. But I think even the harder drugs, and seeing drug addiction for what it really is, which is a kind of sickness. But in terms of, you're absolutely right that the law enforcement does not come down on, young white people. It comes down on people of color. And, it's the way in which we, unfairly enforce these laws. When you talk to law enforcement, what you'll often hear is that, typically say like in Chicago, right, in the south and west side of Chicago, which are predominantly African American and predominantly very, very poor, the drug markets are outside. People are using drugs outside. That's what will, in some sense, call in law enforcement. Their white counterparts, if they're dealing drugs and doing drugs, which they do, as you said, at a higher rate, they do it inside their houses or in college dorms, places like that, and law enforcement leaves them alone. I think the other side to this, which is really important, and I think this is where, the white kind of ratio you cited, is that, most young people, whether they're black or white, it's not unusual for them to experiment with drugs. But most people also grow out of that. Just because you might do drugs as a young person doesn't mean you can grow into a very productive adult. And the justice system really stunts that development for young people of color. And, that's, we have to look at that this is not just, ways to police people, but you're also affecting the rest of their lives. And, to really defeat or to really fight crime, to really, fight, drug addiction, it's through opportunity. It's through making people's life better. And what we know very well now is that a criminal record, and certainly, long prison time in a prison cell, does not increase opportunity. It decreases opportunity.
Now, the U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world, dwarfing the rate of nearly every other nation, including China, which I think is about half of our rate, which is it's very telling. So where do you think, if you're looking back in time, where did we go wrong? What can we do to start fixing the problem? So we have a two-pronged question here. Where did we go wrong? How can we fix this?
Well, we went wrong in all kinds of ways, and I think it's a really hard
question. Where do you begin?
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize it is a complicated question, and it's actually a really complicated answer. And yeah, this began, up until about 1975 or so, you know, the United States had, you know, still a pretty large prison population, but much, much smaller. So, for example, 1975, Illinois had about 10,000 people in its prison system, or a little under that. Today, we have about 50,000. The United States incarcerated about 250,000 people altogether in 1975. Today, it's 2.3 million. And, you know, I guess I point to a handful of discrete causes. You know, without a doubt, we're seeing a loss of kind of industry, living wage jobs, which, you know, beginning in the late 70s, early 80s, decimated places like Chicago. The deinstitutionalization of mental health, you know, for a lot of people, before 1970, if they had a mental illness, they would find themselves not in a jail, which is what happens today, but in a mental health institution, which weren't necessarily much, much better than jail, but a different system, and you wouldn't have the collateral consequences of a criminal conviction. And then without a doubt, it's the war on drugs, and with that, you know, the war, I would call the war on black men. And I think all those together, you know, create the situation we have today, and it's embodied in our laws, it's embodied in our economy. And so it's not something that, you know, this system we have took, you know, 40 years to build, and it's not a system that we can undo quickly. But it begins with, you know, conversations like this, really trying to understand how is that we got to where we are, what do we need to undo it. And I think it starts with, you know, a cage, which is what prison is really about, is not, you know, a cage can do one thing. It can incapacitate someone. But beyond that, you know, rehabilitating, deterring crime, a cage can't do that, and we shouldn't ask it to do that. We shouldn't ask it to be a place that we treat people with mental illness. We shouldn't use prison and jail as a kind of de facto treatment system, which is what we do today. But these require real hard policy changes, and a change in our culture.
You know, you mentioned something really important is policy change, and that comes with our legislators. And I really find it hard to imagine a politician or a candidate running for political office not saying, I'm going to be tough on crime. It's almost like they have to say that if they want to be successful. So what would you rather hear from politicians? What's the right thing that for a politician to say, that is the politician we need to have in office?
Well, you know, I guess, and to kind of go with the slogan, you know, we want someone to be tough on crime, but we want someone to be smart on crime. And, you know, and incarceration-heavy policies that we have now are not smart on crime, and they're not tough on crime. What we know, especially with young people, that sending them into the deep end of the justice system, sending them to prison, makes them more likely to reoffend when they come out. Again, prison is very good at incapacitation. It's horrible at everything else. So I think it's to make, you know, one thing I always, you know, and I talk to state legislators all the time, you know, is to say, look, I mean, prison has a role to play in our justice system, but it has to be a very narrow role. Prison should not be our first response to crime. And I think too often, especially within, you know, in the legislature, it's their first reaction, right? Something really bad happens. Typically the first kind of move people will make is, well, we got to like increase penalties. And that's the kind of gut instinct that we have to kind of pull back.
Right.
And you're right, it's very hard because, let's be honest, you know, when we feel afraid, and this is what crime does to people, right, it puts us back into a kind of primitive state. And the person who can tell you, I have the answer for your fear, that always feels right. Even if intellectually we know it's wrong, the promise of safety is a really powerful one. So I think it begins with educating legislators, but I think more importantly, it begins with educating common folk, you know, saying like, look, we all want to be free. You know, we all want to be safe. We all want to have, you know, opportunities. But our prison system is not giving us that.
And our prison system needs to turn around. We need to work with legislators to change it. So you're talking about, you know, in essence, working with legislators, but also working with the public to back up these kinds of decisions. So that if the legislators want to go forward with this kind of reform, they'll have the support from their constituents. So it really is groundwork.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a funny thing to say, but I think prisons have very little to do with the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're more a piece of our culture, and they say something really important about who we are. And it's not a good thing, right?
I know, I was going to say, what are we saying about ourselves?
We are a very punitive system. You know, the idea, and this is something that Jack Howard, you know, built for the state nonpartisan prison watchdog, and this is kind of a message that I carry to people. You know, I've been in most of the state's prison systems, and I believe that prison has a role, but I think even for people who maybe commit the most serious crimes, you know, who we want to see in some kind of, you know, confined facility, I think this is still a horrible thing to do to somebody. You know, I mean, putting someone into a cage, regardless of what they did, is a horrible thing to do. And I think we're far too casual about how we do that. Yeah. Taking away someone's freedom, taking away from their family is a horrible thing to do. It says something not about the person in the cell, it's something about us. And I think that's what has to change. We have to change, right? It's not the people who are committing crimes. I mean, crime will always be a part of our society. I think we can do more to prevent it, but we can't eradicate it. What we can do is change how we think about, you know, because ultimately what is all, I think the best cure for crime, as far as, you know, there is a cure, is fighting poverty. That's really where crime prevention really occurs, you know, occurs. It's living wage jobs. It's better schools. It's opportunity. Mm-hmm. And
good,
you know,
housing and so forth.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the change that has to occur. That to solve these problems, we're not going to solve them with a prison cell. We're going to solve them through opportunity.
Let me ask you real quickly, because we have to wrap up before cutting to a break in about a minute. But statistics show that if upon release a former inmate finds steady work, he's significantly less likely to become a repeat offender. But the problem is employers see that person was incarcerated, that's it, door closed. So,
yeah.
You know, you're talking about fighting poverty. We want to put people back into the system. What can we do to convince the business industry that hiring a former inmate is actually to their benefit as well as the society at large's benefit?
Well, you know, there are certain tax credits that employers can get for hiring people who've been in prison. And I think, you know, it's the ambassadors to that are people who actually hire people out of prison. I've heard again and again and again from employers that people who come out of prison are their best employees. You know, there's something, anyone who can survive prison, anyone who can kind of come back from that has what it takes to succeed. And I think oftentimes what they really need is a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And again, employers who make a regular practice of that, they will testify to that.
Very well said. So if you make it through prison, you have what it takes to succeed. That's an interesting way of putting things. Never saw it that way. All right, we're going to have to cut to a break. So thank you so much for joining with us tonight. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You got it. John Mackey is the executive director of the John Howard Association of Illinois. To learn more, log on to thejha.org. This breaks sobering FBI statistic. Roughly 12% of the United States population is black. Yet in 2011, black Americans constituted 30% of persons arrested for a property offense and 38% of persons arrested for a violent crime. Stay with us. After the break on Radio Slum, we'll continue this conversation with my next guest, Charles Farmer, a former inmate and currently one of the leaders of the Green Reentry Project. Radio Slum's a live call-in talk show. To add to tonight's conversation, give us a call at 312-263-ISLAM. Again, 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking on Facebook by posting your thoughts on our wall at facebook.com/
Every classic burger is made with 100% natural, halal-certified Angus beef. Epic Burger uses real, premium-quality ingredients in their mission to serve a more mindful burger to every customer. There are 8 Epic Burger locations around Chicagoland. Grab a friend and head to Epic Burger to try the halal-friendly burger today.
You're not a Facebook fan of Radio Islam? It's not too late. Our doors are always open at facebook.com/radioislam1450, where you're always a part of the family.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the show.
You're listening to Radio Slum at WCEV 1450 AM, Cicero, Chicago. We reach the world by streaming live at radioslum.com, where you can also review our past shows. Radio Slum's a live call and talk show on the air every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central. I'm your host, Janann Hashem. Tonight, as part of our Black History Month programming, we're exploring African Americans in the prison system. Our lines are open to take your call at 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking on Facebook by posting your thoughts on our wall at facebook.com/radiosam1450. My next guest is a former inmate for 20 years and was released 6 months ago. And he's currently a leader at the Inner City Muslim Action Network's Green Reentry Project. Welcome to Radio Islam, Mr. Farmer.
Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. With the help of Allah, the Beneficent and the Merciful.
Alaikum salam. Peace to you too, my friend. Now, you were sent to prison for 20 years at the young age of 18, and you were released 6 months ago. How did the world that you left behind look like when you returned to it last year?
Well, everything has changed because I became a man in prison. So my mind process stopped at 18. So my world is at 18. So when I returned 20 years later, I approached the world as an 18-year-old. And, you know, the people also approached me as an 18-year-old because they didn't see my age has not accounted. My life experience didn't account for my age. So I had to take all that into account. And when I got out and seen how the world has evolved, it was like a cultural shock.
Wait, did you go back to your old neighborhood?
Yeah, I seen it, but I don't live it around the whole neighborhood.
Right. Did it change much for the better, for the worse?
It was like the same people doing the same thing. I didn't see a real evolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably good then that you're not living there and putting yourself back into that environment. Let me ask you this: when you were incarcerated, were you given during the last 20 years any kind of like particular tools of how to deal with life once you re-enter into the community?
Well, not necessarily. It wasn't given to you. You have to take that on yourself. I particularly lean toward Islam, for one, and the education. I became educated inside. I got two degrees and a couple of certificates. So I spent half my life inside in the classroom, and I believe, and I see it right now today, that helped me in my transition.
And looking back, would you say there was any good that came out of the incarceration?
Mainly the education, the process. Mm-hmm. It gave me a chance to become educated. Mm-hmm. Because before I went in, I was also going to school, but you have other factors that you deal with on the street that you don't have inside. So I didn't have those factors, and I was able to gather myself and gather my character, and I pushed forward on the educational side and try to become educated and basically change my mindset, the way I was thinking, and to become a positive individual, become a positive force.
You know, it's interesting you say that because my last guest said that with people who do re-enter into society, he says if you can make it through prison, you can be successful just about anything. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I truly believe that because you have so much against you, and dealing with that being Black History Month, and we also recapping the history of the African Americans in America, you also basically experience a form of slavery inside. You experience that, the hardship and the chain, the overcrowdedness, the being packed on to next to each other like the hulls of the slave ship. So you experience all those type of things inside, and basically if we can survive that type of environment, those type of oppression, that type of loneliness, then you could basically survive out in the free world.
Now, if you hadn't been incarcerated, how do you think your life would have unfolded over the past 20 years?
That's very hard to say because I was always into school, so I think I could have been successful outside. It's always about the way the choices you make and the way that you look at things and your attitude. So just because I went to prison, that didn't make me no less being successful. I don't think so.
All right. And when you did have your moment of reentry, when you finally left the prison, what was that like? Can you share that with us, with our listeners?
Yes. Well, with me, I wasn't overjoyed. I really didn't. I just felt like I had so much catching up to do. So, and you know, the world has evolved. I haven't been out in 20 years, so my entry wasn't a party or nothing like that. I didn't want any of those things. It was during the month of Ramadan, so I was fast. So I was trying to stay focused to what I need to do to become a successful individual on the streets.
All right, keeping your focus. We're going to have to go ahead and cut to a break, so you just stay with us, and we'll have you on the flip side of the break. And folks, this breaks sobering statistic from the Department of Justice. While Black, white, and Hispanic drivers were stopped at similar rates nationwide, Black drivers are three times as likely to be searched during a stop as white drivers, and twice as likely as Hispanic drivers. And furthermore, black drivers were twice as likely to experience the use or threat of violence at the hands of police officers than both white and Hispanic drivers. Stay with us. After the break on Radio Islam, we'll continue this conversation with my guest, Charles Farmer, a former inmate and currently one of the leaders of the Green Reentry Project. Radio Islam's a live call-in talk show. To add to tonight's conversation, do give us a call at 312-263-ISLAM. Again, 312-263-ISLAM. We'll be right back.
It's Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume to save on their very own USB drive. It's huge when somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
7,000 high school students drop out every school day. If you stack their desks one atop the other, it's a pile more than 17,000 feet high. That's 12 Empire State Buildings. But what's truly scary is that another stack is going up tomorrow. We can keep students in school. Visit boostup.org and take the first step. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Hey, parents of children with asthma, here's another hit from the Breathe Easies.
Come on and clean up the mold. Whoa. Clean up the mold. Whoa. Mold can trigger asthma in kids young and old. Come on and clean up the mold. Whoa. Clean up the mold in your house.
Whoa. This song may be fun, but childhood asthma is not. Preventing asthma attacks can be as simple as cleaning up the mold and mildew in your house. For more Breathe Easy tips to help stop asthma attacks, go to noattacks.org, brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the show.
You're listening to Radio Islam at WCAP 1450 AM Chicago. We reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com, where you can review all of our past shows. Radio Islam's a live call-in talk show on the air every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central. And I'm your host, Janann Hashem. Tonight, as part of our Black History Month programming, we're exploring African Americans in the prison system. Our lines are open to take your call at 312-263-ISLAM. Also, again, that number is 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking on Facebook by writing on our wall at facebook.com/radioislam1450. My guest for tonight is Charles Farmer. He was recently released from prison after serving a 20-year term there. He was released 6 months ago. So returning to society, Mr. Farmer, I would imagine it's not the easiest thing for a person to go through. You said that you were released during the month of Ramadan, which kind of, I think, I imagine this is a very, very blessed month. It will help give you that focus, that drive that you need to do what needs to be done. In your transition, what were some of the challenges that you faced coming back into society?
Well, the most challenging was with me was jobs. I think job is the most important thing. The educational process will help you with the job when you're coming out, but the job was the most important thing. And with the Green Reentry Winning Man, the Independent Muslim Action Network has done for me is given me opportunity to not only basically get a job, but also serve the community and things, so on and so forth. So I think that was the most positive thing, getting involved with the Man Center and them giving me opportunity to just help in my reentry, giving me an opportunity to get a job and serve the community.
And how did you find out about IMAN, the Inner City Muslim Action Network, and their Green Reentry?
Well, actually, one of the Muslim brothers that I was locked up with, he was involved with it, and he recommended me.
All right, that's cool. That's really good. And can you describe for our listeners what exactly this project is about?
Well, the Green Reentry is about rehabbing or rebuilding the community, like foreclosed property, buildings, houses, and things of that nature. So we go in, we rehab it, those buildings that was condemned, drug infested, and, you know, all those type of negative things. And we'll come in, what we're doing is coming in, building the community back up, and we also using the green reentry aspect of it is not only just tearing things down, but trying to lighten our carbon footprint on the earth. Mm-hmm. So we also will use existing materials and not just tear everything down and throw everything away. It's not about that. It's about reuse and recycling and just moving on with something along those lines.
So you essentially rehab foreclosed houses and abandoned houses and all, rehab them so that they're environmentally friendly. Is that correct?
That's right.
And then what happens to these houses?
Those houses also, it gives the opportunity for the community to come in and live in them.
And when you say the community, is like, do they pick it, you know, is there a lottery? How does somebody get chosen to live in one of these houses?
Basically, they would put in for it, and, you know, the brothers would come together and choose the family to go into these houses.
Okay, that's really cool. That sounds really, really positive. And did you come into this with, carpentry skills, or did Iman or some other organization help teach you these skills?
We've been taught on the job. I personally never took a carpentry class. Now, we had those different aspects. When you're growing up, you do different little things. But this program here is teaching us things about carpentry, electrician, plumbing, HVAC, so we getting all that while we working on hand on site. So we have subcontractors that come in, they teach us, and we help them and be an aid to them at the same time.
You know, and when you're working with these subcontractors and other people off the street, do you get any kind of like mixed reactions from them when they hear that you were formerly incarcerated and you're just trying to get on with your life?
Oh, no, they're fairly positive, especially when they get to know us very well, because, you know, at the same time, they do not, the job is going to take a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And as we steady being there, steady with them, steady helping, they're steady explaining, we ask them questions, they're steady explaining these things, you know, everybody gets to letting their guards down. So we form the bond with them, a friendship with them, and they understand perfectly what we are. They don't have any type of discrimination against us or anything.
Exactly. They get to see the human in you and nothing more. And that really says a lot, about the importance of the work that you're doing, the importance of the work that they're doing as well. You know, let me ask you this. In terms of best behavior, when a person learns of your imprisonment and they don't know anything about it, they don't see that human inside of you, what would you say his best reaction to be when he learns about this? You know, I can only imagine that kind of like moment of awkward silence, perhaps. Should a person, you know, just ignore that, ignore the fact when they hear, you know, someone's been incarcerated, address it? You know, what are the boundaries that show respect?
I personally believe that in today's society, everybody knows somebody that went to prison. So I do not see any type of discrimination as far as people now, as far as employers, that's another aspect. But the social environment that I'm in, everybody knows at least somebody that's been in prison. So that's no real big shock.
Yeah, this is a very true but very unfortunate statistic that you're saying. And most people do know somebody or someone who's been in prison and so forth. I read a statistic recently that in Illinois, 1 in 3 persons will have been arrested, so have some kind of encounter with the law. And this is not like traffic tickets. It's misdemeanors and felonies as well. You know, if you were to address a crowd of teenage boys, Mr. Farmer, what life lessons would you share with them? What wisdom would you pass on?
The most important thing that I would have to say is to become very, very educated. Because once you step in, the courtroom is basically for men. And the courtroom is not for boys. It's not for them. They say the ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
So become very educated and understand, do not live somebody else's life. And that's what the young boys do when they join these gangs or what have you, they live another man's dream. Live your own dream, live your own life, make your own decision. And also, you have to know that you're going to have to be accountable for your decision. So, and just to recap of Black History Month and the slavery aspect, America, in the 13th Amendment, is strictly said it forbids, you know, forbids the slavery. Slavery has been abolished. It has an exception to the 13th Amendment, unless you commit a crime. So if you commit that crime, they can basically put you in a slave-type environment. That's what the penitentiary is. It's always exception to the rule, and a lot of people doesn't know that this exception and this rule actually exists on the book. So if you commit these crimes and you going through these courtrooms, you will be treated as a slave.
You know, you might have gone into the prison system as a boy, and you might have come out thinking that you're looking at the world as a boy, but you've definitely come out as a fine, fine man. So thank you so much for being with us tonight, Mr. Farmer.
Thank you very much, and thank you to my family that's listening.
You got it. That was Charles Farmer, a former inmate for 20 years and currently one of the leaders of the Inner City Muslim Action Network's Green Reentry Project. To learn more, log on to imamcentral.org. This breaks sobering statistic. According to the U.S. Government Accountability Office, in 2012, more than 70% of public defender offices reported that obtaining adequate funding and providing adequate compensation for their attorneys were extremely or very challenging to the ability of their office to provide indigent defense services. This leads, of course, to an unequal playing field of resources. Stay with us after the break on Radio Islam. We'll continue this conversation with my next guest, Naomi Milstein, who is here in the office, in the studio with us. She's the executive director of the Chicago Freedom School. Radio Islam is a live call-in talk show. To add to tonight's conversation, give us a call at 312-263-ISLAM. Again, 312-263-ISLAM. We'll be right back after this.
How do you throw a curveball? How do you build a fort? How do refrigerators run? How do fish learn how to swim?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
How high can you jump?
But you don't have to know every answer.
How many phone numbers are there?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
How do cell phones work?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
What's electricity?
They just need you.
What's the moon made of?
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUSKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
All in together now, we can make it better now. Come on, can we do it?
Hey, no, now we can.
We'll rope it up,
cause we know how to jump.
We'll roll it out,
we know how to skate.
We'll cut it down, cut it down.
We know what to eat.
We'll swap it out.
Just moving a little and eating better every day can help make you and your kids healthier. Search We Can online to find doable tips and activities that you can use every day. That's We Can. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the show.
You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago, and we reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com, where you can also review all of our past shows. Radio Islam is a live call and talk show. We're on the air every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central. I'm your host, Janann Hashem. And tonight, as part of our Black History Month programming, we're exploring African Americans and the prison system. Our lines are open, folks, to take your call at 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking by posting your thoughts on our wall at facebook.com/RadioSlam1450. Naomi Milstein is the executive director of the Chicago Freedom School. This is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to create new generations of critical and independent thinking independent thinking young people who use their unique experiences and power to create a just world. Naomi has worked in the field of youth development, community-based education, and restorative justice for the past 12 years before joining Freedom School. Welcome. Thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope we were a good excuse for you to leave early from the office.
I've got a radio interview.
Always works for me, right? My husband comes home, hey, you want to go do grocery shopping? No, I have to go to the studio. He's on his own, right? Yeah, if we take a look at the African Americans who are born after 1990, or maybe even 1980s, or we can make it 1990s, and onward, you know, up until right now, it seems that going to prison in many parts of America's cities is just not the exception. It's the norm for this group. Just like Mr. Farmer, our last guest, said, you know, I don't know anybody who doesn't know somebody who's been to prison, you know, with his particular subgroup. How do we break that norm? The big question.
Well, you know, I think that part of it and what we do at the Freedom School is really being able to create spaces where, you know, young people can be involved in programming within their communities that is addressing some of these injustices. So it's young people being able to come together, build relationships with each other across the city, and really dig deeply into these issues that are affecting them in their community. So a lot of our young people, which you know, we work with teenagers, and they are often looking at issues related to the school to prison pipeline and incarceration. They're looking at you know, issues of food justice. They're looking at intimate partner violence. They are young people that want to take action to create change. And so, you know, I think being able to have that space where they can authentically have these conversations with adults and other young people, because they're not really, there aren't a lot of spaces to be critical about what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so to have that space to ask questions, I think, is one piece of it. And enabling young people to build the skills and build power individually and collectively so that they can take action and make a difference. And that's part of what we do at the Freedom School. You know, and also really thinking through, you know, how do we work with adults so that adults are working with young people in ways where youth feel empowered and respected.
My last guest had mentioned the importance of education. I said, mm-hmm. if you were to pass on words of wisdom, what would it be? He said, education. I mean, it was over and over and over, which is really, I've always felt part of the key to getting out. My guest before that said the end of poverty. We've mm-hmm. got to end poverty. What are your thoughts? Both of these, one of them, the other, or is there something else you'd like to add in?
No, I think it's all of that. I think it's looking at education and how do we create schools where young people feel safe, where young people are learning curriculum that's challenging and relevant, and where they feel like they can create positive connections with adults. And then also in the realm of schools, you know, being able to have opportunities to you know, not just be pushed out through suspension and detention and harsh discipline policies, but have opportunities to repair harm and resolve conflict using restorative justice. Being able to address, you know, systemic issues of poverty mm-hmm. and for young people to see that that there were policies that were in place that have caused communities to become disinvested. And what does this mean? And how can they then, you know, not only build their own, access to schools, but also be able to really address this issue in a deep way. I think it's you know, education, it's addressing poverty, it's about young people feeling like they have voice as well.
Empowerment really takes you far.
Yes.
Absolutely. How is it possible to channel this youthful energy away from anger? Okay, anger at the system, anger at the police. The police are in our school. The police are lining our streets now to go into school, to go out of school. They're arresting my cousin, my brother, my mother, my father. They're going to be arresting me. I mean, how do we channel that energy and that pent-up negative energy, perhaps, to something that's positive, to say, no, but you can change policy. When they say, well, look, policies haven't helped me at all, you know, so I'm just going to get angry and get it out through violent means.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we do at the Freedom School is we use restorative justice circles to have a safe space where young people can come together in a safe place, and through some facilitated questions, they get to tell their story about what's going on with them in their lives. It's a way to create healing, and for young people to hear the stories of other young people and know that what I'm experiencing in my school or my community, I'm not alone. And just being able to have that space to share that story, can channel that anger into something positive, where they say, okay, I'm not alone. Other people experience this, and just the act of speaking your truth is healing.
And if they're hearing other people having the same kind of issues, the same problems, I mean, first of all, expressing yourself is very empowering. Mm-hmm. Just to feel like you've been heard really brings self-worth, right? But if you hear, you took a breath. Go ahead. Feel free to cut to share your thoughts.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, into that green spot, right? But if I were to hear this community is having the same problem, this community is having the same problem, I would get angry.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get them from that state of potential anger to that state of, let's fix this problem, let's use the means that are available, let's go to people who not only will hear us but are in a position of power to hear us and to affect change?
Right, so that's the other side of the work that we do, which is about taking action. And so being able to have that space where youth are building their skills in organizing, in public speaking, in facilitation, in program planning. And so we have young people that are learning how to do all of those things so they can channel their energy around these issues to then take specific action in their communities, and to connect with adults that also care about these, who are also working, on the policy level or in their communities in other ways. And through those relationships and through using those skills, they design their own action plans that they can use to channel that energy into a way that's going to affect change.
And do you take them down to Springfield for like a lobby day or the conference?
A lot with some local officials,
mm-hmm.
and we've partnered up with other organizations that are working with youth that are also that might do the lobby day, and we've joined up with some of those groups to do that too. So we do try to engage, local leaders and politicians and hearing what our young people have to say.
I hope I didn't let the cat out of the bag or anything like that. Now some of your students might be listening, oh, we're going to go down to Springfield now. She said it on the air. Okay, we're going to have to go ahead and cut to a break. And before I do, I'll share this. This breaks FBI sobering statistic with you. Black youths account for 16% of all children in America, yet they make up nearly one-third of juvenile arrests at 28%. Stay with us. After the break on Radio Sound, we'll continue this conversation with my guest, Naomi Milstein. She's the Executive Director of Chicago Freedom School. Radio Sound's a live call and talk show. To add to tonight's conversation, give us a call at 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking on Facebook by posting your thoughts on our wall at facebook.com/RadioSound1450. We'll be right back.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take a deep breath in and let go of the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you hit that piñata into your neighbor's yard. Let it go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the show.
You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago, and we reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com, where you can review all of our past shows. We're also available on SoundCloud at SoundCloud/... Radio Islam 1450. So you can not only listen to our shows, you can actually download them and you can comment if you like, but just be nice in your commenting. Radio Islam's a live call-in talk show on the air every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central. I'm your host, Janann Hashman. Tonight, as part of our Black History Month programming, we're exploring African Americans in a prison system with my guest, Naomi Milstein. She's the executive director of Chicago Freedom School. Folks, our lines are open to take your call. We'll be keeping them open for a few more minutes at 312-263-ISLAM. Also, let us know what you're thinking on Facebook by writing on our wall at facebook.com/radiosom1450. So, you know, we were talking a little bit about, some of the keys to keeping someone out of that school-to-prison pipeline, as you had mentioned. And one thing that I'm curious to know about is actually the role of employment. 15, 16-year-olds, if they're anything like my children, they want to go to work. You know, when a person leaves prison, they are significantly less likely to resort to recidivism. If they have steady job, steady work, then, you know, if not. So is there any role for youth employment and any kind of connection or correlation between youth employment and helping our youth kind of get through those difficult years?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, it's vitally important. You know, young people want to, they want to work, they want to contribute, they want to, build skills that are going to really set them up for success in their future. And we know that at this point, you know, that that youth unemployment is really at one of the all-time highs, right? And we know, you know, that in particular, you know, for Black youth, about 50% of Black youth are unemployed. And so, you know, it's really, you know, important that young people have access to jobs, whether it's, you know, having additional funding for summer jobs programs, whether it's, businesses and organizations that are able to offer summer internships. And all of those things can really help to build young people's skills, to build their relationships with adults and other young people in their communities, and really, support them as they are growing as leaders and where they're going to be heading in their life after they, you know, complete high school, and also just enable them to feel, they want to contribute, they want to be able to make a difference, and things like summer jobs and jobs can help to make that happen.
And I think they get to also see, through the role model at the workplace, what it takes to be successful and the sweet taste of success, you know, and not to find success through going through the prison system and making it through there. But, you know, we can short circuit that and just, you know, stick to the guns. You know, get that education and pull yourself out of the potential of going to prison. What would you think contributes to 50% of our Black youth not being employed? That seems like a really high number.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that part of it is having access to jobs, being able to have the opportunities where others are going to, being able to find those jobs, being able to even have people that can help you network to find where those jobs are, I think is part of it.
I think maybe if I might, yeah. Just kind of putting the dots, connecting the dots together. Our first guest said poverty is a key mm-hmm. of it. And if these kids are coming from, areas that are already poverty stricken, mm-hmm. right, where are they going to find the jobs if their parents can't find a job? You know, it's really, really tough, I would imagine. You know, it's Black History Month, and pride in one's history is such a big part of the Freedom School curriculum. How do you use Black history to inspire and lift these kids from the potential realities of their community?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the Freedom School, you know, we are, our Freedom School was founded out of the legacy of Freedom Schools in the 1960s, and this is a particularly important year because we're marking the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. And so, you know, at the Freedom School, you know, so much of what we do is engage young people in learning about history. And so we do that through, looking at, we connect with people in the community who were civil rights leaders during the civil rights movement here in Chicago and in the South. So we have speakers that come in. We watch films. We read. We engage young people in discussions about history. And be able to connect that, you know, both Black history, but also sort of history of social movements in general and ways that people have fought for civil and human rights, and bring that in and use that history as a way to connect to some of the issues that are going on today. So, you know, we think it's vitally important that young people are seeing those connections and building that interpersonal relationship, as well as being able to use text and film to do that.
Do you see them kind of reaching out and taking that baton and carrying it forward? Do you see that happening?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, we see our young people really just being engaged and wanting to learn about history, wanting to know what that experience was like, and then connect it to the struggles that they have for creating change. And they become inspired by the strategies that were used in the past and use that to really inform how they're going to take action for change in their own
communities. Do you see any of them wanting to be another Barack Obama?
I mean, yeah, and to be you know, community leaders. I mean, we
that's
see
great.
Wanting to be community leaders in all ways. So
all right. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Milstein, for coming in and being with us in the studio tonight.
Thank you very much.
Naomi Milstein is the executive director of Chicago Freedom School. To learn more, log on to chicagofreedomschool.org. We'll leave you with this final sobering statistic from the Department of Justice at the state and local level. 15,026 public defenders handled 5,572,450 cases in 2007. That's almost 5.6 million cases. Let's hope these numbers have peaked and we'll take a sharp downward turn. Y'all have been listening to Radio Summit, WCEV 1450 AM Chicago. Radio Summit is a Sound Vision Foundation production. The thoughts expressed tonight are those of the hosts and guests and none of the Sound Vision Foundation. Executive producer is Abdul Malik Mujahid. Your producer for today has been Tahira Shireen Rahman. Our engineer for this evening is Jeff Rizzo.
You have been listening to Radio Islam here on WCEV.
This is WCEV 1450 AM Cicero, Illinois. WCEV, we're Chicagoland's ethnic voice.